Mini episode 1843 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1843. I have with you here today FDH Lounge dignitaries Rick Morris and Ben Chu. The majority of the time that Ben is with us, he is here in his role as FDH Hoops Analyst, as he was in our previous mini episode, looking at the early part of NBA free agency in 2025. However, increasingly over a period of time, looking at the streaming industry with us, we have a nice little running mini series on the show for that, and increasingly also getting him involved in our TV reviews, which has been fun, because I do a lot of those solo, but it's always more fun to break it down with somebody. And Ben, like myself, has been a fan of the Bear over the last couple of seasons. We are here today to break down the Bear season 4. We have some fairly divergent thoughts on the Bear season 4. So basically, if you're out there reading opinions on Reddit, at the one end of the spectrum and the other end of the spectrum that you might find on Reddit, you'll find us represented here today on the show between me and Ben. So Ben, I know, is a little fearful going in. He might get hate mail from some of the fans. But then again, you know what, Ben? Much like with the Cleveland Cavaliers, there's a lot of doomers in the fan base, too. There's a lot of people that are fans of the Bear that love to bash the Bear. So I think a lot of those fans might be lined up with you.
Well, at the end of the day, every second counts, right, Rick?
Yes. Yes. Particularly if you have a literal countdown clock of months or whatever it is on the wall.
That clock of doom, that's what I like
to call it. Yes. And that, I will say this, though. Speaking of that countdown clock, the one that ends up materializing on there. And by the way, and sometimes, like when we did our Mountain Head review some weeks ago, sometimes we'll do this as a spoiler-free review. If we're trying to give you an idea to watch something that you haven't watched yet. But anything that's like a number of seasons in, that's not this. This is not a spoiler-free review. We're catering to the folks that are fans of the show here. So we're going to be getting into all kinds of different things that happened in season 4. But that countdown clock, I will tell you, and one of the things too is that a lot of times we get shaped by our experiences. I, like most people, I think just about everybody in the universe sort of regards the Bear season 3 as the equivalent of Justified season 5, which is like something that I'm not sure it's strong enough to say we'd like to forget that it ever happened, but it's the weakest part of the show. That's a consensus. So there were things they did in season 4 where I was kind of like, oh, geez, are we in for this again? And it didn't happen, and I was so happy. I was afraid the way they were talking about Tiffany's wedding earlier in the season, I'm like, oh, they're going to stretch this to the last episode. They're going to stretch Sydney's decision to the last episode. And like, Sydney didn't even make her decision at the end of season 3. That stretched into season 4. So it's like, I thought that we had the same stall game going on where things are going to be unresolved. And that didn't happen. The wedding episode ended up being one of the ones here, that episode Bear. That's one of the signature episodes of the show thus far. That's kind of a consensus. But the pacing on this, they didn't stretch things to the very end like they did season 3. And that's one of the many things I found to be better than that.
Right. And I feel like, too, Sydney went through a lot of changes in the season.
Yes.
And again, I will admit there it got to the point of exacerbation for me of her decision took way too long because it's got stretched over multiple episodes. I will say the 4th episode, I believe the title of it was called Worms. Mm-hmm. It was one of the better episodes of the season 2, just to show her interaction with her niece and then just all these other little things going on in her life. That story plot line I felt like wasn't the best. And I also felt like, too, Carmi's decision making, as we all know, is Carmi Carmy things. So
yeah,
that kind of lasted too. I did like the little interplay in the middle between Ibrahim and obviously, you know, are we ready to prepare his Emmy already?
Yeah.
I'm ready. I am prepared to start, you know, preparing the Rob Reiner Emmy already. Here we go.
Rob Reiner and the Shark Tank.
I will say this definitely was better than season 3. Yeah. I felt that timelines, I saw a lot of other reviews thought similarly, which was some of these episodes felt like they drug for a bit. And
yeah.
Again, we use this rule, especially with drama TV, even though this is more of a comedy drama. It's really hard sometimes to not have filler episodes, and I felt like there are at least one or two filler episodes here. But overall, I did think the pacing was good. You did get to see a little bit more of interplay between Carmi and his relationship with a bunch of different staff members. And then you also saw the growth of some of the characters that we've seen, specifically with like Marcus and Tina. Mm-hmm. And even Natalie's character showed a lot of significant growth in the wedding episode too. So
yes.
Overall, if you liked character-driven television and character-driven plots, you loved The Bear season 4.
Mm-hmm.
If you didn't, you're probably on the fence about how good was this season. And again, it felt very similar to season 3, that season 4 is leading into season 5, which has now been confirmed officially.
Yep.
There's some discussion that's going to air at some point in 2026, but that's still a big question overall.
Yes. And by the way, as far as Rob Reiner with his Shark Tank-esque role, can we say Rob Reiner playing a titan of capitalism equals stunt casting? But it worked. It worked. I mean,
he and also, you have to give credit. Jamie Lee Curtis did another fantastic job
in her
role, essentially playing Donna Brock. So
yeah. I mean, yeah. Well,
not surprising. You have to get, again, whatever I feel personally for seasons 3 and 4, you do have to give credit to a lot of the acting on the show, because these are talented performers who've done a lot of great things.
Yes.
And they're continuing to push for it. And again, at this point, with Hulu essentially at some point going to fold into Disney Plus, this is still arguably the premier show of that streaming service, essentially.
And it
feels like this is going to just keep on going, just in terms of plot lines and things.
Yeah.
The one thing I would say, Rick, in comparison to 3 and 4, is mm-hmm. we saw characters grow a lot more in season 4. Season 3, I felt like almost everyone was stagnant. There was just drama.
Yeah. I didn't like that.
You see character growth.
Yeah.
The thing that I would say, and I don't know if you disagree with me on this, but there were timelines I felt like the plots for some of these episodes were just so, like, person needs to do A to get to B scenarios. And sometimes that can just take you out of the whole overall plot line, because we're really still seeing about how the bear is doing. And then there's also that little tease in one of the earlier episodes about the potential, whether it's the Michelin inspector or the investor or.
Yeah.
So we still don't really know what's going on. I would make a comparison, like, this kind of, to me, kind of felt like White Lotus season 3 almost, where there were some really high point episodes that were really incredible television. And then there were just episodes where a lot of us are like, could we have just left this on the cutting room floor, essentially?
Yeah.
And cut down the season to save time.
It's interesting because you made a number of points that I want to follow up on, a number of points that basically track to my notes that I have here, which you talked about the whole thing with the character development and everything like that with season 4. And I agree with you. One of my notes here is, because I've put reviews up on the podcast for the first 3 seasons. I did some solo ones here. And one of the things, I remember noting this after the season 1 the review that I did, the cinematography that it had, because like when Carmi would be having these panic attacks, the way that it would spell it out with like the quick cuts in the kitchen and everything like that, and it to the flashbacks to, you know, dealing with, you know, an abusive chef or this or that or whatever, like the cinematography of like portraying something inside somebody's head is the kind of thing you've almost never seen before on TV. By the time you get to season four in many points felt almost kind of like a play, because you don't get extended scenes on television. You just don't get this. Like, the season finale was essentially a bottle episode. Yeah. It was out there in the back alley. Like, what other show ever has done a bottle episode for the season finale? But it worked because you had all these things that had to spill, and it felt like you were watching a play. Except in a play, the scenes wouldn't have gone on that long. There would have been, you know, curtain falls and this happens, whatever. But like, it just kept going and going, but it felt natural. because those of us that have had these kind of deep conversations with people where you have to work things through, that's what it feels like. It was so realistic. But to go from the one extreme of like the technological wizardry of putting you inside the head of somebody as they're having a panic attack to the quiet kind of repose of watching a play and very character-driven stuff. I mean, that's a range that most shows don't have. And you talk about, you know, the actors on this show and everything like that. And they're like, we've reviewed so many different programs on this show. Invariably, some of them fall outside of what we call this new golden age of TV, but most of them are somewhere within it. These shows that are on, the critically acclaimed shows with the great acting, the great casts going along with the great writing. This has got a cast of just, you know, superstar performers top to bottom, whether they're all household names or not. And there's only a handful of names that are. One that is, and you mentioned her before, Jamie Lee Curtis, and playing the role as Dee Dee here and just killing it in that role. And I think of her as being somebody that's in the sort of, you know, area of, there are very few actors out there. I always talk about that, like most great actors are great within their wheelhouse. And that's one of those things where, and again, with, and I don't mean this with any, you know, shade whatsoever to Jeremy Allen White, but like looking at his role here, looking at his role in Shameless, looking at his role, you know, as Kerry Von Erich, which, you know, it was a little bit of a stretch physically, but who's counting? But like, he's good within his wheelhouse, right? This troubled kind of character trying to work through stuff. But like Jamie Lee Curtis transcends that. She's basically, you know, like Meryl Streep, like Bryan Cranston. These ones that can do almost anything. And I wonder if we're not going to look back on this 20, 30 years from now, and we're not going to see this as the beginning of where Io Itabiri started to be seen that way. Because just Sydney in particular this season just blew me away. And with a lot of like the, you know, the facial acting that she had to do and playing the indecision and playing the agonized kind of what do I do as well. So the things that she portrayed facially as well as, you know, the things that came out of her mouth, like she may be one of the actresses of this generation that steps up to that level. And we may look back on this show down the road as like, oh yeah, remember when she got her real start, her big break on this show, and she became this superstar that's won like, you know, three best actress Oscars. Like that could be in her future.
Right. And again, it really shouldn't be surprising because she's a very talented writer. She also did a lot of work with Rachel Sonnet. They also did a movie called Bottoms.
So I'm not familiar with her other work. I'm not familiar.
Yeah. I mean, overall, just for her, like she was, I mean, she was strictly sort of a deadpan comedy. Well, no, I wouldn't say deadpan. It was more of a comedy actress.
Okay.
But then she's also done stuff like she wrote for, she also wrote for What We Do in the Shadows. She also did a lot of another sort of indie movie called Theater Camp, which is also a very interestingly rated movie over time. So again, she had her own sort of episode in the Worms episode, which was very interesting. But again, too, I feel like her character stretched that decision a little bit. And again,
it was a little maddening, but that's the writing. Yeah.
But it did get to the point, it went from episode 2 to episode 6, 7, 8. And I'm just like, at this point, you shouldn't be agonizing this much over a decision because it's clear, you know, you're going to want to stay at the Bear. It hasn't been, you know, it never really felt to me that she fully decided to go and take on this thing. It was more she sort of was talked into it and wanted to listen to about it. And again, too, one of the discussions we've always had is the whole nature of her character and imposter syndrome. We've discussed this before, that she is a great chef.
Yep.
And we see in the final episode where Cedric Carmi tells her, you are the Bear. And at some point, she still hasn't fully realized it. And you're starting to see that she is getting more fully fleshed out as a character. And again, too, is that you're also seeing, you know, Tina, essentially, like her, she kind of had more of like a C plot for most of the season and essentially just trying to make that ravioli in under 5 minutes, but ultimately accomplishing it. Right. Marcus had his sort of BC level storyline with him selling his house, but then also being named essentially the Food and Wine Best New Chef scenario. Yeah. So that was, it was an interesting, there was a lot of more, I'd make an argument because it felt to me like Carmi was most of what season three was about. And season right. four got to delve into some of these other characters and put themselves in different situations that we normally would not have seen.
Well, you know what? And it's interesting you say that, because you've just helped me to realize in real time here, one of the reasons that I put season four right up there with season two, because season two was the same thing. Season two was more of an ensemble. Season one was so much about Carmi. Season three was so much about Carmi. This shows at its best when it's spotlighting more of the characters. And again, did we see as much of Tina and of Marcus as we did in season two? No, because that was to the extremes of it. They got their own episodes as we were focusing on them. And you weren't going to get that the rest of the way. But it's a thing where I just think, as far as the indecision, as far as the stretching out of things, and like, and I've seen online that there are now parodies of like the way that Carmi talks, and that like, and then Richie comes in and yells at him and whatever. And it's like, that is kind of a template. It is kind of a thing here. But I will say also too, and I try to account for my own biases when I watch a show. Like, this is a show where, I mean, I'm a guy with a communications degree. I'm a guy that's had to handle a lot. And I also have what was, it was somewhere between a major and a minor. It was called a certificate in something called political communications. So I've had to use that skill set a lot in my life. This is a show that's going to frustrate somebody like me, because I see them on there. I'm like, why don't you just say this? Like, you see, you find yourself doing it all the time. If the average person says that three times an episode, I might say that eight times an episode, because I sit there and I'm like, well, here's what I would say in that situation. And so a guy like me, I expect to be frustrated, but that's part of the beauty of it. I kind of take that into account going in. They don't communicate at all. They're horrible at it. And one of the biggest criticisms I have of season three was exacerbated by what happened in season four. Everything was the buildup to this confrontation between Jeremy and who I will refer to, just because it makes me laugh, as Chef Joel McHale. And like, it had no impact on this season. I mean, you've got Carmi coming to these revelations about, you know what, I've been a toxic person. I need to break the pattern. Like, that should have come up at least once of like, let me tell you something. You know, and it's not just the stuff I dealt with at home. It's not just the stuff I dealt with my mom. It's not just all that kind of stuff. It's what happened to me when I was in the kitchens. If he wants to talk about breaking the pattern of toxicity, and the entire season three was building up to a confrontation with the man who viciously bullied him, shouldn't that come up at least once subsequently? I mean, that's a legitimate criticism I make. Some of these other criticisms, it's just like, okay. And I get that it's designed to frustrate me because Carmi's a bad communicator, Sydney's a bad communicator, etc. But like, that's a plot hole that you could drive an 18-wheeler through. The fact that the Chef Joel McHale thing never came up ever again, when it's a crying example of why Carmi is the way that he is. And one of the things that shaped him into being what he is, and he's trying to break that pattern. So, yeah, that should have been referenced, man. It clearly should have been.
I mean, they had, and again, we've discussed this, they had the opportunity to do it.
Yes.
But they just kind of let it happen. And I'll admit to, like, again, Carmi taking a back seat probably was better for the season, you know.
Yes.
But again, too, one thing I also felt was a little bit ho-hum was about him apologizing to Claire, and how it was kind of like, it happened, it was a thing, and then all of a sudden everyone, I'm back to being, you know. It kind of felt like that. I, after seeing the apology scene, I almost felt like that they were going to do more with that. And they kind of just like, I had another phone call later, they somewhat got back, not necessarily on the same page, but got back onto some level of sort of, you know, not the best way you can probably describe that scenario right now is like, not, it's not alive, but it's not dead either. So I felt like that was a little bit of a weak point in the season. And then again, too, the issue, I think, at least for a lot of the reviewers that I read the hat about the Bears, is that when you have some of these seasons and some of these characters get these B, C plots, if they don't really impact the season, it gets kind of wasteful for a lot of people. Like, why are we, you know, again, that's what makes the Bear such a tough show to review, because I wouldn't say you want to cut any of these episodes, but essentially there's one or two of them that we could have removed entirely from the script and we wouldn't have known any better. But then again, probably. That's also what makes the show great at the same point. And again, too, it's like, again, it feels almost more like, and again, I know you're a, as a fan of TV, it's starting to me there, it feels like the Carmi Claire, Jim Pam scenario is starting to play out. And I'm like,
Sam and Diane.
I mean,
yeah,
it's really part of it. And I understand, like, they're trying to show how Carmi is growing as a human and growing as an individual.
Right.
But did he really change from season 3 to season 4 outside of maybe allowing them to have essentially a stable menu at the end of the day? No, he didn't do anything. He said he stayed the same.
Yeah, outside no, that's of, like, a good
recognize,
point.
The only thing he did was he recognized what he was doing wrong. That's it.
Yes. Yeah. And,
but did he fix it, though? I don't know.
There is some growth that comes out of that. And that's a thing where, because I was thinking about this, as much as I loved Mad Men, one of my biggest criticisms was that it was just, it was rinse and repeat. Like Don Draper would learn. He would go through a pattern of growth and he would learn something. And then it would just be like a complete regression. And it would just be, and it was the entire series, spoiler alert, was basically him, you know, just coming to a point of enlightenment and then basically like throwing it all away and then clawing back to another point of enlightenment. And it sort of felt like we were going through that a little bit with Carmi, but it was easier for me to overlook that because the rest of the cast clearly was. I mean, you look at somebody like Richie and it's like night and day from where he started. Like everybody else is going through these growth patterns, even the facts, even with their things to some degree. And I will say that, I mean, if you're looking at some of the Reddit criticisms, you know, Claire Bear is somebody that, you know, much of Reddit seems to regard as sort of like Poochie from The Simpsons. So she's never been particularly happy. And the facts in particular came in for a lot of hate in season 3. And I think justifiably so. And I think, and you talk about like, just, normally they make the stunt casting work, but like John Cena as one of the facts was just that was a wet fart. And the whole haunting thing that they overplayed through the course of the episode, like season 3 facts stuff, like they're fine when they're comic relief. That's what they're supposed to be. And that brings us to, again, you talk about stunt casting. We talked about Rob Reiner before. The other big one for this season here, Brie Larson ends up being Francie Fack in the Bears episode here. The one that, again, when you're talking about when we get to the end of the series, the episodes that you know are going to be on the top tier, Bears is going to be one of them, much like Forks earlier on and the ones from, you know, season 2 that they had a couple of them there. And the other one where it was the backstory to the family holiday dinner, I think that was right neck and neck with when Forks was on. But this one here is going to go down as that. And the whole thing of where under the table. Now, I know some people on Reddit thought that it was overdoing the gag by having everyone keep crawling under the table, but it was building to the whole thing of taking the picture afterwards. And just the way that the entire episode played out, they avoided, I think, a lot of, you know, the cliches that you a lot of times get in wedding episodes. It was nice that kind of bookended that flashback episode to the family dinner that went so horribly awry, not just with Donna being there and being basically pretty mellow and everything like that as much as she could manage, but Uncle Lee coming there, you know, and filling in the blanks a little more with Carmi. I do wonder at this point how much more reassurance Carmi needs that Mike loved him and believed in him, because I thought that the money in the tomato cans would have kind of proven that and some other things along the way. So the reassurance that Carmi still needs at this point kind of puzzles me a little bit, as well as at the end that like Richie thought that like Carmi was blaming him for Mikey dying. Like I thought that was what it feels like. That's something they probably addressed between them previously, you know, because they had a big, you know, healing moment toward the end of season 1, actually. And here we are at the end of season 4. And it felt like maybe they were chewing some of the same food as far as some of the things that had happened in the past. But again, that episode there, Bears, I mean, that's one where even for the folks that didn't love the season, on Reddit, there are some people. I mean, there are some harsh, harsh, quote unquote, fans of the Bear. There are people on Reddit that thought that that episode was, you know, too much of a try hard as far as being an instant classic or something, you know. But that's one of those things where, again, you weren't as high on season 4 as I was, but even you were kind of like, man, that was a great episode.
Yeah. And I think one of the things, too, is when the Bear has sort of like, and we talked about like the nature of how the Bear can be a play at some periods of time.
Yes.
Their episode decision making. Mm-hmm. That felt more like a play than any mm-hmm. of the episodes we had seen so far. Outside of yes. maybe the Holiday Family Dinner, that's the only other one.
Yes.
And it did see significant growth from Richie because obviously he was debating if he wanted to go to Tiff's wedding or not. And then
right.
having to essentially then help out his, you know, I guess you want to, I don't want to call him his enemy, but sort of that
friendly.
Guy scenario.
Yeah.
Played, of course, again, I got to give also good, great, give credit to Josh Hartnett for playing that role very
yes.
well.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And just, again, you showed growth and you, showed thing, and again, also the interplay between Abby Elliott and you know, Abby Elliott's character, and obviously with Natalie and Francie at the end of the day, just trying to find common ground because that it was clearly shown in earlier episodes of the season that there was a significant rift, and now all of a sudden everything is back to some level of normalcy. And
mm-hmm.
again, it's an argument that can be made for the show that there are characters on this that do a very good job of when they are confronted with a situation, essentially like Richie and essentially like Natalie, they make very quick decisions and make very intelligent decisions in comparison mm-hmm. to, let's say, to essentially like Sydney and Carmi, who essentially have to stew over these situations and then have to get to a
yes.
decision from that. So again, and then also to the side plot of Ibrahim's trying to grow the Bear sandwich shop is also mm-hmm. a major importance one too. And also the whole discussion too, it overlaps the entire season was, will this restaurant make it? And there were at least right. a handful of episodes that we saw that were very more Bear-like, I would say, from season two. That was
yeah.
more about the food, more about the running of the business, instead of what we saw a lot in season three was just positing of information and positing of scenes to try and put Carmi in these situations that are not the best for him.
Yes, and I will say, too, the whole thing about, you know, I that was something else I had in my notes here, too, so I'm glad you brought it up. Ibrahim, his growth being fleshed out, which, again, he's really a background character. So, but it was good to see him getting his due as a character here, and this is one where his subplot for this season may be significant in the future of the restaurant, because this whole thing with the franchising might be key to saving the whole venture, the franchising being based on, you know, the bones of what it used to be with the beef and the sandwich window and basically expanding that into a couple of restaurants here. And that's like, it's so funny because it's like, that's like an art imitates life kind of a thing. Cause I've said this, I don't remember if I've said this on the show previously, but I've said this off air to people a whole bunch that, like, I had never in my life in the freezer section of the grocery store seen Chicago beef sandwich material. I'd never seen that until the Bear came on. And like the last couple of years, it's been trendy. You see it now. Like, hey, you want to have Chicago style beef restaurant, you know, sandwiches. So here's the show basically kind of working that into it. Almost kind of a wink and a nod at how it's played
out.
And
I would say, too, Rick, probably one of the more poignant moments from the season was when they had the table from, I believe it was from California, the four top with the girl who had just got remission from cancer, essentially.
Yes.
Having,
yes.
you know, essentially, and Richie treating every customer like, you know, the best and all that scenario. Just building, like, if you want to, like, a poignant moment to, like, define what season four was, it was probably that moment.
Well,
just showing how the team has come together and where there was a lot of chaos in season three and season four, it was more about
yeah.
the team coming together more than anything else.
And I talk about this often with shows, because the shows that are truly great, it really is a marriage of the writing and the acting talent, the melding of that coming together. You look at the arc of Richie from the beginning of this show to right now. So it's a combination. The writing for him has been excellent. And also, you know, Eben Mosbacharach has been so just drop dead, just amazing in his role here, because you mentioned that as being a very poignant moment. There was a moment where I actually like really choked up watching it, of where like he felt so sorry for Tiffany's husband, like thinking that he was failing as a stepfather. Like he lied to him. He's like, oh, she raves about you all the time. And I was like, just the fact that he would do that for that guy that he had a little bit of resentment towards for him buying him the Bear. But he understood in that moment why he bought her that Bear, because he was feeling like he was you know, not enough for her in his role as a stepfather. Just that he would do that for him was a very poignant moment. So, I mean, we could sit here and we could rattle off a bunch of poignant moments that Richie has had since the beginning of this show. And it really is just amazing. But as far as Ibrahim and the whole thing there, you know, with that subplot and what that may do for the future of the restaurant here, it is one of those things where, again, the whole sandwich window kind of a thing, keeping that going, that is something that's instrumental to this moving forward. And another one of the background characters, now this might be a little bit of overthinking based on what I saw on Reddit, but somebody was kind of positing here. So you've got Gary, who has become a very successful sommelier at this place, a guy who basically started from scratch in this role and has gotten to this point. Somebody was positing on there that, like, Gary being somebody who's this new to being a sommelier, and you could see during the season he was still kind of figuring it out as far as, like, trying the wines and everything like that. Somebody on Reddit was like, that in and of itself would hold them back from getting a Michelin star. If you have a sommelier that is not quite whatever, it's like, I look at that, I'm like, that seems like overthinking, because is he going to necessarily get exposed when the person's there? I mean, if the reviewer for the Michelin thing goes to order some wine and, you know, if something is imperfect in that and Gary maybe makes the wrong recommendation, sure. But, like, to automatically assume that just because you have a sommelier with a little bit less experience, it would automatically hold you from getting a star, and that it's unrealistic if they get a star, I don't buy that. Because some of it is the luck of the draw, you know, as far as what happens when the person comes in and everything like that. And from what we saw, Gary had come a long way in a short period of time as far as learning this. And it is a thing where one of the things that, again, I talked about it before, that, like, for me and my life, and so much of my life, you know, being based in, you know, my knowledge of and my education in communications, where it can be frustrating to watch, but that's by design, because somebody like me is just going to be screaming, why didn't you say this? Why didn't you say that? But there's parts that I identify with in these characters. And the fact that they're trying to grow. They're always trying new things. They're always looking at different entrepreneurial aspects. I want to grow in this area. I want to grow in that area. Like, that's one of the best, most inspiring parts of the show to me, is seeing that from Richie to Ibrahim to Gary. These guys are all getting thrust into something they haven't done before. The facts, even as much as they've always been comedic, you know, effect here on the show, and some of their things have been schemes in the past, like, you know, baseball cards or this or that or whatever, like, they're always reaching and clawing and trying for something to try to help build a better life. And that's one of the subplots of the show that I really find inspiring and that I kind of identify with.
And, I mean, one person you also didn't mention, like, we saw the growth of Marcus over these last couple
Marcus, seasons. Yes. Marcus is awesome. How can you not root for Marcus?
And then also a cameo from Luca in season 4, too.
Yes.
Who did a great job again, as always. So, you're seeing a sort of the fleshing out in season 4 of the bear coming into its own, even though it's on the clock, essentially, to use the NBA NFL draft reference, that even though their time is running out, it's going to be in the, and again, we saw there's little hints and pieces of the potential that the potential reviewer, the potential Michelin star, the guy from Food and Wine could potentially have been the guy from Food and Wine. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's also the interplay in something that I thought was probably going to happen, but was also what was made apparent in episode 4 to help improve. Excuse me, not episode 4, but episode 1 of season 4 is when Richie brought in the team of Ever, essentially.
Again, yes.
To help get them up to speed. And again, we saw essentially his scenario with Tiff kind of blow up, and now they're giving potentially a love interest in Jessica from Ever. So if we wanted to put in a scenario of, like, Richie finding another scenario with another woman on the show, there is that apparency. And because we all know, especially after reading, you know, stuff on, like, you know, for pro chefs, how incestuous the kitchen is at periods,
right?
You spend a lot of time with these people anyway. And again, I think one thing that we also saw too from this season that I don't think we saw a lot from season 3 was just kind of essentially just the growth of how it necessarily wasn't about the food at the bear, but it was the experience of the bear.
Yes.
Before, mm-hmm. It was just trying to keep up with the Joneses. And now it's more like we have our own identity, even though you know, the financial scenarios are not as good as they would have liked.
Right. And the whole thing, too, I'm glad you mentioned about that, that Richie bringing in the crew from Ever, Jessica and Garrett and Renee to come in there. Like, what that kind of felt like to me is it almost felt like that this was a crew almost from, like, another show. Like, there was a show about a fancy, successful restaurant or whatever. And just like the crossover. It felt like a crossover kind of a thing in that way of, like, because it was like that was the crossover that I never knew I wanted. And I think a lot of people probably felt that, like, oh, my God, what must these guys be thinking getting thrown into this kitchen? Because it's not as chaotic as it was, but boy, oh, boy, there's still a lot of elements of it, right? So it's like seeing them come into this thing and trying to picture the world through their eyes, getting exposed to this place that was trying to get to the level of wherever already was. That was it's so inspired that they brought them in, because it was just like that. It wasn't the cliche culture clash either. It's not like right. They were looking down on them in any way. A lesser show would have made it a culture clash. But this was one where they were successful people that inspired everybody else to raise their game. And I felt like that was exactly the way to play.
Or essentially, I would say, to help right the ship at the end of the day.
Help right the ship, yeah.
Three, with Carmi essentially going through all these different menus every day, just burning out essentially.
Yep.
Season three finale. It's just, it's again, to use the analogy, we see it in sports all the time. It's the bringing on veteran players to bring stability to either a young team or a team that isn't at their best just yet. So it was a nice little thing to see. And I feel like we're going to see a lot more of them in season five too. So
I hope so.
I feel it's going to make sense. And especially, you know, with the interplay between Richie and Jessica, I mean,
yes.
Come on. We all right. saw that scene in episode 9 with the adjustment of the tie, you know. There's potential there, Rick Morris, because I think that if you want to say another major thing about season 4, it's essentially the rekindling of old relationships. We saw that with Claire and Carmi.
Yeah.
We saw that sort of scenario with Natalie and her husband.
Right.
We're also seeing the potential, like Marcus and his father.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also we also have to talk about, Jamie Lee Curtis's character reconnecting with Carmi.
Yes.
During the thing where he made her the chicken from what he learned from the French Laundry, the fame, the cookery right. out in the Bay Area. Like I said, there were high points in this season and there were some low points, but overall, I think we both agreed that was season 4 better than season 3? I think we can say with a resounding yes.
Yeah.
But I do feel like season 5 is going to have to pay off for season 4.
It is.
Because again, it's starting to remind me of some very good sort of drama shows where
right.
you're leading the audience to get to a result. And if it's not defined well, then it's going to hurt the show in the totality of the future.
Okay, well,
hurt the show for future seasons, because people will look at it and say, you did all this work to set this up. And I think that's why season 3 was not as successful as it could have been, because it was just more, we're dealing with the Carmi situation, and because it's the Carmi situation, we're just going to interplay this over 10 episodes. And now it's just more like, there's room to grow in different regions for different characters now, instead of just Carmi at the end of the day.
Yes. And so something I had in my notes here, and when we first decided we were going to do a review together, I had two questions of, will it be renewed? And then, should it be renewed? I would have answered, yes, it will be renewed. And it already has been. I'm guessing you would have guessed the same thing. You would have guessed correctly that it would be. On the whole, should it be? I'm guessing you agree with me as well. Yes, it should be, because you need season 5 to tie everything together.
It kind of at least feels like, for this show, very similar to a Succession, another show we reviewed.
Yes.
It would do a great service to the show for it to end in 5 seasons.
Yes.
Even though I think it could totally do a 5-6, could potentially even do 7 if they really wanted to.
Sure.
But it almost feels like that this is sort of a show that's going to reach its end point soon.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of fans would totally agree to that, even though it would stink for the bear to stop running new episodes. You don't want the show to start turning into sort of like jumping the shark territory just to be relevant, or just to, you know, produce seasons because it's making Disney and Hulu money at this time.
It seems hard to imagine that would ever happen, though, because this is a show that's it's always added.
We use this rule too, Rick. We saw it with The Office. We saw it with some parts of The White Lotus this year. We saw there's been other drama shows, and again, the show is so unique because it is kind of half comedy, half drama. But we've seen drama shows and comedy shows do this to where they extend too long, and you start to lose the core fan base over time. And again, I think it's actually very good that the reviewers for season four actually this essentially very, you know, I would say almost like very blunt with their reviews.
Yeah,
because in most cases, I would say blunt reviews are usually very good for future seasons.
Sure.
Because it helps write the ship for the show's writers and producers. And I feel like I said, was it my favorite season of The Bear? No. Bear season two, I think, is up there for one of the best seasons of TV in our lifetime, at least. But there's a legitimate opportunity, I feel like, that season five could help create a whole new sort of legacy for The Bear just as a premier show of this timeline.
I agree. Now, the one thing I want to say is you said some comedy, some drama. Look, the fact that it's a half-hour show, or generally it is. Some of the episodes have been supersized, but like, I feel like it gets misplaced as that. I think it's been nominated as like a comedy, and it's like, what, just because the facts are in the show? Like, you have comedic, you know, things here and there, but every drama has, you know, comedic elements to it. There's no show that Breaking Bad had comedic elements to it from time to time. So it's like, I think it's a misnomer that this show in large part is a comedy just because it's a half hour show. That's been one of my biggest bugaboos the whole way is about that. But as far as it goes, you know, with the stunt casting and everything like that. And by the way, speaking of the casting, a name that came up before, I mean, I'd always sort of had the vague sort of, you know, feeling that if you're looking at talented folks that, you know, deserved to be more in the forefront, Abby Elliott is certainly somebody I've thought of in that way. And she's really vindicated the faith that I had in this show. I mean, she's done such a great job as Sugar.
She has.
And
to give her credit from her time at SNL to her on How I Met Your Mother to this, like, she's definitely shown incredible range as an actress.
Yes, she's really, really good. And that's a thing where, so in looking at this here, on the whole stunt casting thing, as they've done from time to time with getting the different actors in the different roles, we saw John Mahoney again, or John Mahoney came in this season and, you know, did his whole, you know, kind of, you know, shtick again as Stevie. And so that's, there are some things that are just really kind of classic.
And I mean, we also had the iconic moment in the season. I'd be remiss to not discuss Oliver Platt in the car.
Yeah, Oliver Platt's great too. This is a great role for him as Uncle Jimmy. Yes,
fantastic job again. But
and Uncle Jimmy,
in my opinion, the funniest moment from season four is when Computer is talking to Albert Schnurr, essentially Rob Reiner's character. And, and essentially. Oh, lordy, lordy. Essentially, at the end of the day, like, Cicero essentially is hitting the horn and telling him to leave because Nod's got to suck his balls and all that, too. So
right.
That was an iconic scene. And again, I think The Bear, when it does best, is it mixes comedy and drama into the same show.
Yes.
And that was great. I almost feel like, and this is a weird thing to say, Rick, and I don't know if any of the viewers or any of, like, anyone who watches this would agree, but I do almost feel like when they have that balance, the show is much better. When they go too heavy drama, it kind of loses its edge a little bit sometimes.
And this is a show that they resolve some things off camera. Like, Sydney told Carmi, don't tell anybody about my dad. And it was like the fact that he told them that, like, our dad's in the hospital with a heart attack and she didn't get mad at him. That was something that was probably resolved off camera. But you hope off camera, and I have enough faith in the show to believe that the computer told him in the car about the sandwich shop idea, and that Uncle Jimmy was probably like, oh, that's a great idea. That's the one thing that might save this place. But yeah, when you look at some of the other, you know, I don't know if it's all stunt casting, but whether it be Bob Odenkirk as Uncle Lee, again, John Mulaney as Stevie, and some of the other ones that have been recurrent over a period of time. Brian Koppelman as the computer. One of the things here, just looking forward, that like if they end up deciding to go with, you know, because they sort of teased it out this year that Carmi and Mike's dad and Sugar's dad is still alive. They seem to be hinting at that, that like their Mr. Brizzotto is out there in the world. I started thinking to myself, like, what could be the funniest stunt casting that they could do for that one? And I decided to myself, what I need to see in that role, I need to see Andy Daly. That would be amazing.
Of course.
Yes. That would be a showstopper right there. Now, again, what would be the sort of default type one? You mentioned White Lotus season 3 before. I mean, one of the default things is, because you could put him in any situation, like what I said before about Jamie Lee Curtis and some of the other ones, Walton Goggins is clearly at that level. Walton Goggins could do any kind of role out there. He could clearly play this guy, and he would make him very, very, very compelling. So I don't know if we're going to see Brizzotto Sr. show up again at some point. But that is one of the things that could happen in season 5. You could see in season 5 that it ends up being he'll be back on the scene, and that, you know, it'll be something here. It would be also funny, too, if we're talking stunt casting, that since John Mulaney's on this show, can we bring in a distant member of the family or whatever that's played by Nick Kroll?
Yeah, I mean, that could be on the table.
As a Kroll show fanatic from back in the day, I need to see that.
I mean, another name that we also, because again, Big Mouth has a lot of ties to the show too, and they were done. Could we see possibly an Andrew Rannells scenario?
Okay.
Could we see a guy like Jordan Peele show up at some point in the future? So,
wow.
Yeah, I mean, let's just say, again, Rick, the show clearly from its stunt casting has already sort of blown the whole scenario of like they can take anyone and try and make them right. A realistic character. Let's be honest. Who saw Brie Larson coming as the fax sister of all people at the end of the day? So,
well, and you know what? This is one of these things, too, where, you know, you talk about that, her being one of the fax, and that was a lot more effective, I think, than when they did the stunt casting with John Cena in season 3. But I think the whole thing with the fax, they're the ones here, too. You know, if we get just like a complete Kroll show crossover, could you not picture the fax being good friends with Bobby Bottle Service? I mean, that would be outstanding. So, I mean, there's a lot of different ways they could go in season 5 and surprise and delight us. But yeah, I mean, I put this one probably just a shade behind season 2. I'm higher on this season probably than the average. I think you're a little closer to where the consensus is, at least on Reddit. Fair-minded people will say that this is better than season 3. There are some people that I think have completely closed minds. They're like, it went into the crapper in season 3 and never came out. I think that's unfair. Season 3, it seemed like, again, you were kind of in Don Draper territory where things were just sort of circuitous and like there wasn't any character progress being made. There wasn't any real forward motion being made. And a lot of it was that it was so much built around Carmi and him being caught in the kind of, you know, the dilemmas from in the past. It's interesting that, like, I will say, I think the whole thing about Carmi losing his love of cooking was a little bit underplayed during the season. Sugar threw it out early on, and I'm like, well, where did that come from? Because she's like, it's okay if you're losing your love of cooking. And it was like, I didn't at all get where she was getting that from. And then towards the end, he was kind of like, yeah, I think I'm losing my, you know, passion for it or whatever. So it's like, whatever else the guy thinks he could do in this world, I mean, I have no idea. I mean, if it's not be a chef there, you'd think it would go be a chef somewhere else because, you know, it's what he's great at. It's what he's going to make more money at than anything else that he would do. And oh, by the way, even if you don't want to own a piece of the thing, what stops you from just working there? So it's like that part of it too, I kind of didn't get. It just, if I have a criticism of that, it felt that it was a little bit rushed building towards Carmi sort of losing his.
I do agree, yeah.
And it was underplayed, and then it was kind of like, you know, because I didn't even get the whole thing of like, cause, you know, when he took his name out of it, I'm like, I initially took it that was his gift to Sydney. I'm going to give you my share. Now, I didn't realize that like Sydney, with her horrible credit of like, you know, financing this whole thing of being poor as she's been for so long, she looks at it like, oh, great, more debt. Thanks a lot, a-hole. I kind of get that part of it, but I took it like he was giving her a gift. I took it as unselfishness. She took it the opposite way, which was really interesting. But I think my confusion on that, in my defense, came from it being underplayed. Like, there was a little bit too much left to our own interpretation.
It almost felt like what I would have preferred, Rick, if they would have just cut that episode out entirely and made that the debut episode of season 5.
Okay.
And then essentially you just have it end at... I would think, like, you could literally just have ended it at that timeline of, like, of Pete calling Sydney just to tell her that Carmi had read him out, essentially. And then this would have been the first episode of season 5. I understand why you pack it so hard together, but I also agree with you. It just felt rushed.
I'll tell you this, though.
One of my criticisms of the season is that there were B and C plots that didn't do a lot sometimes, and there were timelines where they felt like they were rushing things to get to certain points at times. And again, I don't think the pacing this year in terms of the show was bad at all. It was just
right.
More like you could feel like they essentially chose, like, we're going to have 2 or 3 distinct episodes in the season, and the rest were just, it's going to be filler content at periods of time.
I'll say this, though. If they ended it with
things along,
if they ended it with episode 9, I would have been so down on this season, just like season 3, because then I would be like, oh, great, another year where nothing gets resolved, whatever. Like, so much of my regard for the season comes to how they ended it.
Yeah.
And that extraordinary.
I also felt like at the end and the ending, they didn't resolve that much either. So we got back to,
yeah.
We saw some things get resolved, but we didn't. At the end of the day, the clock ran out, Rick, so that's all
The clock ran out. The whole, how are we going to get out of this thing, you know, was unresolved. Although, again, they didn't know about the sandwich side of the equation.
Yeah,
they didn't, right. None of them, they were sort of walled off from Ibrahim, what he learned on the business end and everything like that. So they didn't know that part of it. But so much of this show is about the interplay between the characters and everyone in this extended Bear family. And just the fact that, like, at long last, everything sort of came out, you know, between Carmi and Sydney, between Carmi and Richie, that, like, and for all these things here and the jokes about typical Bear dialogue of, like, Sydney calling Carmi on something and him being somewhat apologetic and Richie coming in and calling him names and they go back and forth. Like, that resolution at the end, the emotional resolution between the characters, that's what leads to season 5 in my book. You're right. If you're going to sit here and be like, well, the Bear is still, or, you know, or it's still in financial peril. It's still, yes, these things are all still unresolved. But compared to where they left season 3, which was like nothing being resolved, because it was just like, I'm watching season 3. I've had this happen sometimes where I'm like, it's getting closer and closer to the end, and this can't possibly be the end. And, like, that was the end, and I was just like, this sucks. Like, season 3.
I have feelings that both with season 3 and season 4, I think we both agree they left us with endings that weren't, you know.
Yeah.
I call them leading endings because we've seen these in finales of TV shows. Especially, I would make the argument, we see this a lot more in mystery television shows.
Yes.
Where you lead one plot line into another future plot line.
Yes.
And you leave with that sort of cliffhanger at the end.
Yeah.
And again, I'm not going to say that that wasn't the worst way to end it, because I did like that sort of discussion at the end, and then you have the shot of the clock, and then done.
Yeah,
but it also feels like, see how I look at season 4 is going to be directly reflected by season 5.
That's true. Yes, that's where. And I remember reviewing, hard to believe it was 10 years ago, I think, or it was maybe it was 11, but whatever season 5 of Justified was, that was there were two seasons that FDH senior editor Jason Jones and I reviewed in real time. We would do reviews right after, you know, the episode and then post them. And it was a thing where, like, season 5, it like bad timing to do it, because season 5 was, it's the consensus worst season of Justified. They were adventurous. They tried a bunch of different things. They really were adventurous, but it was just a big fat splat as far as how it went over. And I remember Jason saying at the time, maybe we'll look more kindly on this based on the way season 6 goes. Like, he was more optimistic, and it was like, season 6 was great. They ended on a high note, but to me, it didn't erase what happened in season 5. It's like, that's still, like, you know, it would be a big, you know, big tube of copium to say season 5 needed to be the way it was for season 6 to have been great. Season 6 or season 5 walked so season 6 could crawl. I don't buy that. Season 5 could have been a lot better, and you still could have had season 6 be great. So it's a thing. I get where you're coming from, but it's a thing where, you know, as far as, like, you know, it would only work if this is something where it's even more episodic, I guess, in a way than Justified. So I could maybe see your point in the sense of like some of these character things, if they more build into what happens in season five. Like maybe that's where there's a difference with Justified, because Justified was based more on the plot points and the action and the things like that. And the characters were pretty well established, and there wasn't a lot of growth with the characters throughout the show. They kind of were more fixed. Maybe on a character-driven show, maybe what you're saying makes more sense than it made at the time with Justified, because it is about the arc of the character growth. So I guess I've talked myself into believing that. I started off being a little skeptical where you were coming from, but on such a character-driven show, yeah, I can see where whatever happens in season five, we may look back on season four as being very foundational.
Yeah, and one thing we do also have to know, Rick, this is also a timeline where the Bear itself has gone through a lot of changes in terms of its release schedule.
Yes. So
this season essentially was all the episodes one day, and then in seasons past, it's been a slow burn. So I do wonder, because I have a sinking suspicion a lot of people who watch this show probably watched it within a 72-hour time period or 96-hour time period.
I will say,
though, how different this sort of looks if it was a one-by-one episode release instead of a full season release.
Well, look, maybe season one, maybe I stumbled on the Bear after it had been out for a period of time, but it was like, I remember I've binged every season, and I don't think I've had to wait to do that. So the release on this is the weird hybrid of like the release on Hulu, I think every year except possibly season one, but I think maybe even including season one was all at once, and then it's going to be dribbled out on FX the next couple weeks. So it's a weird hybrid. It's one of the only shows I've ever seen that's like a hybrid like this. So I know they've done this in the past. I just don't know if it's been every season of it. But that's where it is going to be interesting to see. There will be people watching it on FX from week to week. And that's where, again, I said at the outset, spoilers are included in this one here. So if you're one of the folks that doesn't have Hulu, only has FX, wait to watch this until it's all over. Although I'm saying this at the 56-minute point, so we might have spoiled it for you already. But, you know, this is one of these things where, again, it's a weird format. I don't think there are any other shows that have gone this way, because most FX shows, you're getting them one at a time, you know, on Hulu. Like, it's right. Generally like as it's released, as it's shown on TV, you get it on Hulu the next day. That's what they did with Cardo.
And that does need to be considered, because we all know to binging a show and then having to watch a weekly show.
Right.
Two different experiences.
Very different.
I wonder if this was, and again, like it doesn't, I think maybe there's just one season of The Bear that did this. I don't think it was in the other seasons, but it does cause a very interesting scenario on a binging scenario where you watch all the episodes within a 72-hour period.
Yep.
Or if it's a week-by-week thing. So again, that also dictates how our viewing of it exists as well. So,
well, and I've described this with other things like that. I've described this with another Hulu show that's very different than this one, Shorzy. But if you watch an episode, you know, if you watch it all in a binge, it is like a movie. For as much as, and it's a cliche that like episodic shows are like long ass movies. Essentially, every season of The Bear is like its own movie. This was basically the third sequel to the first quote unquote movie that was The Bear. That's basically how this unfolds. It's about the length of a movie, more or less. It's about the pace of it. You know, you see the ebb and flow, how it went. There's more developments than there would be in a movie, because you've got first, second, and third act in, you know, all these different episodes. Whereas in a movie, it wouldn't be as much roller coastery as that. But essentially, you know, particularly when you're binging it, that just heightens the whole sensation that you are watching a movie, essentially, instead of distinct episodes through a season.
Right. And one thing that I also have to note with this show, too, is that it's also a very, in comparison to a show like Shorzy or like a show, like a reality show like Love Island or MasterChef, where that's very episodic week to week, it's really hard to watch The Bear just because of the amount of just emotion and just sort of, again, and I felt this season, it didn't play on emotion as much as seasons two and three did. But it feels more like this is one of those shows that even though you binge it, you're not really like being like, I need to watch every single episode all at once, because it is a very emotionally trying series at periods of time.
It is, and it's a thing where, too, like, and I was thinking about this, that, like, I have a hard time, you know, as far as like ranking season one fairly amongst the other seasons, because it was so hard. It's one of those things where it's like, it's very similar. You mentioned The Office before. I recognize Casino Night as like a masterpiece of TV, but like I've watched that very little compared to other episodes because it's so hard, because they wrote it in a way that was so universally kind of, you know, thing of like, you know, somebody puts themselves out there, you know, just to basically get kicked in the heart with a steel-toed boot. Who can't relate to something like that?
Yeah.
The truly, you know, and like season one. So like anybody that's ever dealt with anxiety issues or anything like that, or any type of depression or anything. And I've never dealt with even a fraction of what Carmi's dealt with. But, you know, times like, you know, in the aftermath of, you know, the passing of my mom, I went through some real dark days and everything like that. So you watch something and it kind of brings back memories of bad times. And it's like, and that can make it hard to kind of relate, because it's like season one was an artistic masterpiece, but I can't say it was fun to watch. Like it wasn't, but it was like, you just, but I'm still in awe of the things that they conveyed in season one. It's the duality of, I'm not sure I'd really want to go back and watch it very much, because, you know, sometimes great TV, because they're trying to make it kind of universally kind of relatable to you as far as dark things and everything like that, it can be hard to watch, but that doesn't mean that it's not great artistically. So that's where, yeah, I mean, the Bear, especially season one, is the exemplification of what you're talking about. The other seasons, there are things that are hard to watch. You know, the family holiday flashback from season two, that one's tough. But like, oh man, yeah, that is the duality of the Bear, that some of the greatest stuff they've ever done artistically is some of the stuff that would be hardest of all to do a rewatch on.
I think also to just like put this in a bow, Rick, just if you look right now at the season four page of the Bear on Wikipedia, the assessment of the reviews, essentially like this season premiered to positive reviews from critics, though reception was more muted than prior seasons.
Okay.
And I kind of feel like that sums it up pretty well, where this was a very good season four. But again, this show after season three has gone through so many sort of discussion points just based on how good season two was.
Sure.
That this thought overall is honestly like, it's going to be really interesting to see how they begin season five and sort of obviously stuff with, you know, at the end of the day with the Bear, you know, with the Bear will exist, Ibrahim and the beef. And then you also probably talking about Marcus and his father reconnecting again, Richie and a potential love interest, Carmi taking a step back. There's a lot of interesting plot lines for season five.
There are so many of them. And that's a thing where, you know, and I know that, you know, this is not necessarily, you know, a textbook thing to do as far as, you know, reviewing reviews, but since I've had, this entire time, the Wikipedia Bear season four page open, I scrolled down as you were talking, and I just have to critique something here. To Judy Berman of Time Magazine, you know, talking about how the show had gone from quote unquote humor and wonder and angst in the first two seasons to quote unquote relentless solemnity in the third and fourth seasons. But if we're talking about something, if we're talking about a show that it basically features this kind of character growth, and again, you know, Richie is the most obvious part of that, but you go on down the line with this cast, Tina and Carmi and Sydney and whatever. Character growth is really the story of this thing as it unfolds. You're going to have relentless solemnity. This thing's going to feel a little more like a play, like we're saying, because that's the nature of the show. I mean, if you don't like the way the show has evolved, I guess just say that. But like, relentless solemnity is, to me, a weird criticism to make. Because you can't do a show, you know, that is this character study and is this study of growth from these people being at stunted perspectives to all moving ahead solidly. You can't have that and have it have the same chaotic feel as it had the first season or so. It's just
right. And,
it's
and not I also the case. Think what, this is what also we see a lot in drama series, and we saw White Lotus season three and the final season of Succession as well, where the hype for the show is insane.
It's yes.
The most outside of Only Murders in This Building, it's the either the highest or the second highest watch rate on Hulu.
Yeah.
So again, any show like that, you're always going to have criticism and you're always going to have differing opinions on how this season is. And again, too, I almost feel like our interpretation of season four is coming off of mm-hmm. season three.
Yes.
We will see what happens in season five with the renewal, essentially. Now,
yeah.
Season five is going to dictate how we view season four in the future.
Yeah. Yeah. They have to take this and they have to build on it. I agree. And I have confidence that they're going to, based on the trajectory of the series and the way that it's gone. And so like I said, I have done reviews for the past three seasons of the show, solo ones. This was infinitely more fun, and I know infinitely a better experience for any of our consumers of the program. So thank you so much for being here for this one, Ben. It was a pleasure to break this down with you, my man.
No problem, Rick. I appreciate it as always.
Thank you, Ben, and thank you, everybody, for checking out FDH Lounge mini episode 1843.